Okay, hello everybody. Welcome to ITE1 semester 2 module 7. This is the printer and scanner lecture, and I'm Sean and I'm your lecturer this evening. And this is my first lecture. And before we get started, one thing, I think at some point we're going to be doing a feedback form. Is that correct, Grace?
I'll be
If
setting those
not
up during
today,
lecture.
then like tomorrow or soon.
No, it should be out like
So
today. So
out today, okay. So
I'm
just
hoping
think
so.
about how, so just as you're hearing this, think about how just keep in mind you're going to be asked to fill something out. So think about how whether you're how you're feeling about it. Grace is going to, I believe, do a quiz for Module 6 from last week, and then we'll get started with my portion of the lecture. Is that what we're doing?
Yep, that's what we're doing.
Right, take it away, Grace.
All right, thank you, Sean. We are going to do our quiz from Chapter 6. Anyone have any questions on labs or anything of that nature before we do that quickly? Fair enough. Okay, we will go on to the quiz then. Let me just put myself on auto.
Chat windows. Don't forget to get in your chat windows, guys.
Okay, looks like I'm actually not going to be able to use AutoVox, so I'll just have to read with one hand. All right, question one. Which two features make laptops a good alternative to desktop computers? Choose two, so this will be a yes or no. Is it one, compact design? Yes, that is absolutely correct. That is one of them. Is it lower cost? No, it is not. That's absolutely correct. Enhanced capability? No, it's not. How about portability? And that is absolutely right. Good job, guys. Portability is a yes. Okay, question two. Which device is commonly hot swappable? Is it A, your display? B, internal hard drive? C, PC card? Or D, RAM? Choose now. And if you said C, PC card, you are absolutely right. Good job. All right.
Sorry, Grace, Carol's just turned up, just so you know.
Cool. Hello, Carol.
She's not on yet.
PC.
She's currently got her foot held back and about to boot her computer as hard as possible.
And with that computer,
After
it'll
she does
be
that, she can reboot it.
it. All right, question three. Which type of memory is used in laptop computers? Choose one. Is it A, DIMM, B, RIM, C, SIM, or D, SODIMM? Choose now. Yes, and if you chose D, that is absolutely correct. All right, question four. Which power management control was introduced prior to the advanced configuration and power interface? Is that A, ACCI, B, ACPI, C, AMD, D, APM, or E, APA? Choose now. Fantastic! It is D, APM. Advanced power management. All right, five. What do FireWire and USB devices have in common? Is it A, only one of these devices can be used at a time? B, they are considered hot swappable? C, or devices, sorry. C, they cannot be used with desktop PCs? Or D, they are parallel communications devices. Choose now. And B is absolutely right. They are considered hot swappable devices.
Please try not to answer before she's finished the question, guys, because you're giving everybody else an advantage.
Well, they were actually wrong, so.
It's all good.
What should a user do when operations on a USB memory device have been completed and it is necessary to remove it from the laptop computer? A, reboot the computer. B, choose Start Control Panel, System, select the USB device, then the Resources tab, click Remove. C, click the safely remove tray, hardware icon in the tray. Or D, just remove the USB device from the computer. Choose now. Good job, guys. And nobody said D. Perfect. The answer is C. Okay, which two steps are recommended when cleaning a laptop LCD screen? choose to. So this will be yes or no. A, clean the display screen using tissue moistened with water. That is absolutely correct. No, we do not want to do that. Disconnect all devices attached to the laptop prior to cleaning the display.
Hang on, Grace. We've got a technical problem. Carol can't hear you.
Okay. Oh, because I'm muted, because I'm usually there.
Yeah, I'm still working on it. It's not... It hasn't... Hang on.
Yep, that's absolutely... Guys, it is... Yes, that is one of the things you are supposed to do. Okay, C. Power up the laptop prior to cleaning the display screen.
Did you say up?
Up?
I didn't know whether you said power up or power off.
Power off. Yes, absolutely. And D, remove all sources of power immediately after cleaning the display screen. Well, guys, that would be kind of a moot point, wouldn't it? It also says you...
Then it would be what to do in case of fire step.
Yeah, that would be. The other really good suggestion they have here is remove the LCD screen from the laptop before cleaning it. Right.
If you knew what you're doing, that was put in by the LCD manufacturers.
Okay, number 8. What is the easiest, least expensive way to extend the life of a laptop and keep it in optimal working order? Gosh, this is for just about anything, though. A. Replace parts regularly. B. Clean the laptop frequently, sorry. I can't read. C. Do a clean reinstall of the OS. D. Back up important information monthly. Choose now. B is absolutely right. Now, you should back up all your data, because that will make sure your data's not gone. But the best way to extend the life of your laptop is to clean it regularly. Okay. 9. How would a technician determine which key to press in conjunction with the FN key to connect a laptop to an external projector? Is it A, access Microsoft Office Online Help? B, locate the key with a monitor image imprint? C, access System BIOS Help by pressing the key that is associated with Help? Or D, use the Help menu options for the particular application that is active. Choose now.
Or E, install Windows 7 and not worry about finding the key at all.
Or F, read the manual.
Okay, so I have another question. If you can't see that key, what's another way to actually find out what that key might be?
I just try FN sequentially with function keys until I get it.
Yeah.
And shut the wireless and Bluetooth off.
That might actually turn off your Bluetooth, possibly mute you. There's another way. Nobody?
Read the manual, that's what I said.
Absolutely. Read the manual, because usually you'll be able to find a list of keys in there somewhere. And then you will...
There's a problem with that, though. Usually it says press, then press... Press, then press. Press FN and press FN and... And usually the keys aren't
graphics,
written out.
The keys are usually pictures, yeah.
Really? Because I've seen a lot of
people
actually...
Oh,
are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I meant have the manual translated.
Every cell phone...
Yeah,
every cell phone manual I've ever seen has been press followed by to get this result. The Asus manuals for these netbooks actually does list the keys in a proper table with proper row headers and everything.
Yeah, so does the Gateway
but that's not very common.
NHP ones.
That's You've been cool. spoiled, Grace, because most Apparently. Of the time it's press, then press, then press, followed by, and you're like, oh, good, I'll just do that right now.
Yeah, you can also try Googling for your laptop manual. Someone may have written it down somewhere.
You could also call HP's tech support and say, look, I'm blind. Read this for me.
Fair enough.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, you call tech support and say, you know, what are these? What
say, look,
do you push
I need to know what these are.
The projector manual will probably tell you ours does.
Oh, the projector manual will tell you what you press to actually get the projector to do it, but this is a laptop issue. You actually need to switch the laptop to the external display, which is, doesn't matter which projector you've got to convince the laptop to actually send a signal.
Yes, and our HP projector has a list of brand names, and they say
oh,
function
sweet.
F3 for Gateway, function F8 for Dell, and
yeah,
so on.
Yeah, but sometimes the manufacturers change it from model to model. I mean, that's good
yeah,
if it happens to have the one for your key. But
that's fairly a good... That's a good start.
Yeah, that
yeah
is a really,
you've been spoiled, too.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to.
That's a great... That's cool. All right. Which power mode turns the CPU off, but the RAM is still being refreshed? Is it S0, S1, S2, S3, or S4, or S5?
I think you've heard... It's actually S1, guys.
Is S1.
Well done! Okay. No, it is actually S1. And that is actually in one of your chapter exams, I think.
Carry. I think that's what your problem might be there.
Some people
guys,
be delayed a little,
if, yeah, if you are unsure about this, have a look at this table, because you have this in a worksheet, and if you do A+, you're going to see this on there. It's also in at least one of your finals, because you do get to do two. One of them doesn't count, but it's A+ practice stuff. And you'll see this again. So have a look at that table. What Windows Vista laptop power plan saves open documents and applications to a temporary file on the hard drive with the result that it wakes up, or it takes longer to wake up and bring the computer back to a usable state of operation?
Yeah, wait for the choices.
Yeah, that's right. I was just looking at something. A. Hibernate. B. Hybrid sleep. C. Sleep. And those are all your choices, so choose one of those. No, that's actually A. Because it's not it's not putting anything in RAM. So it has to be hibernation.
What is hybrid sleep? I mean, sleep is sort of keeping your...
Oh, I know what this is.
Hibernation is writing to hard drives. What's the hybrid sleep thing?
Hybrid sleep, believe it or not, originally came out in Linux, because Linux people actually know how to do things, unlike Microsoft, and then Microsoft picked up on it and went, hey, that's a good idea. Basically what it does is it saves a hibernation image. It then also prepares the system for standby, puts the system into S3, then when you pull the system back out of S3, if the standby fails, it can then fall back to the hibernation image on hard drive.
I've been playing with this on my Windows 7 box, and I have not noticed any sort of advantage to this. I'm actually going to go and make double sure that it's actually turned on, because honestly, I've not found anything worth that.
It only kicks in when standby fails, though, Grace. Standby actually has to fail, crash, and burn for the actual thing to come back up off hibernation partition. And what I would say is that when your standby fails, it's not actually Windows that's failing to resume, it's JAWS that's dropping the bundle, which is why it's not helping you.
Okay, we've got three more questions, guys. Which three components can often be removed while power is still applied to a laptop, as long as these are actually not in use? All right, this is yes or no. Battery. No, they don't really recommend you do that. So, no. B, express. That is absolutely right. Express cards can be removed. C, external optical drive. Yes, that's absolutely right. How about flash drive? Yes, you can remove a flash drive when the power is on. Once you safely reject the hardware, that's absolutely fine. So, guessing that internal hard drive and RAM, you probably shouldn't remove all the computers on. Not such a good idea. Okay, 13. A person is unable to connect to a home wireless network of a friend. The wireless network fails to appear as a network. The laptop is in the same room as the access point. The wireless NIC is enabled. What is a possible solution to this problem? A. Attach the computer to the AC adapter. B. Remove unused devices. C. Configure the SSID and any security settings manually. D. Attach an external wireless antenna and configure the wireless NIC to use it. Choose now. C is absolutely right. Good.
Recording.
Okay, and the last one. An infrared device fails to appear under the infrared hardware tab. Which task would remove this issue? A. Move the device closer to the receiver. B. Enable infrared in device manager. C. Enable infrared broadcast on the device. D. Remove the protective covering from the infrared device access window. Choose now. The answer is actually A, because the infrared device, your infrared port is showing up in device manager. The device you're actually connecting isn't, so all you're going to have to do is simply move it closer until it sees it. I think that question was poorly worded. Okay, with that, we're going to give it to Sean, and he is actually going to do a lecture on printers, and you guys are in for a real treat, because he has some good ways of making this lecture actually really interesting. So, there you go, and as he said, there'll be a feedback form at the end for you guys to fill out, because he is actually working towards becoming an official instructor. He's actually graduated his official instructor training, but this is one of the steps that volunteer instructors now have to complete.
Okay, thank you, Grace. And I actually almost had an incomplete copy of my notes end up on my note taker, but got that sorted out while you were doing the quiz, so thank God it was a long quiz. So, okay, today we're going to talk about printers and scanners, as we said. You will learn how printers operate, what to consider when purchasing a printer, and how to connect printers to an individual computer or network. We will also be talking about scanners, which I'm sure we are all very familiar with, because as blind people we need to scan text. So as a quick review, printers produce paper copies of electronic files. I'm pretty sure we knew that, but they put it here. Scanners allow you to convert paper documents into electronic files. We need to remember that we do not yet live in a paperless society, so paper documents are still needed for legal reasons for consumers, private businesses, and government departments. Can someone tell me another reason you might need to work with a paper document, with print documents?
Just a note on that, government is actually starting, the courts are, at least in Canada, are starting to accept electronic evidence, just as a side note. Possibly in situations where there might be a loss of power, such as rural areas. Yeah, they're starting to accept like electronic versions of acts and things as evidence.
All right. Why else would a business need to print documents, though? I mean, besides legal reasons and stuff.
I was saying if it dealt with in rural areas where there wasn't any access to internet or sketchy power, real estate businesses do that a lot, apparently.
Yeah, we also deal with a lot of paper at work on clients that we work with. There's still a lot of paper. Sorry, I have to get closer to my microphone. Anybody else got any ideas, or should we go on?
I guess also storage, because even though it's bigger and stuff, it's good to have it in a, you know, like a non-electronic medium, just in case somehow everything does epically fall over.
Absolutely. Rich, you had something?
Well, I was going to say, in the event that you may need to have the document notarized.
Again, absolutely, yes. All right, so we've got some ideas here. Now, as blind technicians, we're not exempt from having to deal with printers. It is important to know how to help clients purchase printers, as well as set up, maintain, and repair them. And even if you've got blind clients, guess what? We still need to print things, too. So the printers available today are usually either laser printers using electrophotographic technology or inkjet printers using electrostatic spray technology. Dot matrix printers using impact technology are used in applications that require carbon copies. I think the post office still uses some of these. Things to think about when purchasing a printer for a customer include capacity, speed, color, quality, and reliability. And the text calls these factors to consider when purchasing a printer, which is pretty much the same thing. The capacity of a printer refers to how much paper it is able to hold in its paper tray. And you'll actually see this if you look up printers. You'll see, you know, 200 sheet paper tray or 500 sheet paper tray. So if your client will be doing lots of printing, they will want a printer that doesn't have to be reloaded all the time, because it's very convenient to have to do that in the middle of printing a huge document. The speed of a printer is measured in pages per minute, or PPM. Inkjet printers are usually slower, but they might be adequate for a home or small office. The speed of an inkjet printer is between 2 and 6 ppm, while the speed of a laser printer is from 8 to 200 ppm. I would love to see that. Color are black and white. A computer monitor produces colors through the additive mixing of dots that are displayed on the screen. The eye picks up the color directly. The dots produce the color range using red, green, and blue RGB dots. A printer, on the other hand, produces colors using subtractive mixing. The eye sees a color that reflects from the combination of colors on the paper. Printers can either be black and white only, also called monochrome, or color. Your customer may only need a monochrome printer if they are printing out professional letters and business documents. If a customer usually prints out colorful flyers for advertising, stuff like that, or they print a lot of pictures, they'll need a color printer. So you'll need to ask the customer what types of documents the printer will be used for, what they normally print out, to help them make this decision. Now, if anyone has any questions, let me know, because some of this it's simple now, but it's going to get a little bit... yeah, that's a good point. You want to make sure you get something that your customer is going to be able to use. That's kind of hard to tell until you actually get them in front of it. So that one's actually a good one that's not listed here. I like that one.
The other point I'd put in was make sure that the customer can afford the printing technology and the maintaining of the printing technology, which you'll cover later in the module. It's all well and good for a small home office to go, I want to print color flyers, when in fact what they should really be doing is shoveling their print jobs off to an external printing agency because they can't afford to run the printing technology. I have some good friends who go through a set of toners, throw the printer in the wheelie bin, and then wait until they can save up for another printer.
My dad's poster company used to try to print their own posters, and they found that they actually needed to, for the volume of printing, it would be much better and more economical to go through a printing company.
Yeah, because your inkjet printers, the ones that you buy for a home user, are not going to print as much as theirs would.
It's all based on the size of the run.
Yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
It's the size of the run and how much they can afford to spend on the printer and consumables, and we'll talk about that. The quality of printing is measured in dots per inch, and this is abbreviated as DPI. The more DPI, the higher the resolution. When the resolution is higher, text and images are usually clearer. To produce the best high-resolution images, you should use both high-quality ink or toner and high-quality paper. And DPI is sort of like sample rate in audio. The higher the sample rate of an audio file is and the bit rate and all that fun stuff, the better it's going to sound. The higher the resolution in dots per inch you have, the better looking your printer's going to be. You also need to know, though, when too high a resolution is too high. Sometimes you don't really need that high. Okay, a printer should be reliable. Don't just settle for the first printer you can find. There are a lot of options out there, so do your research first. And here are some things to check when you're doing your research. You want to look at the warranty. Identify what is covered within the warranty. That's good to know. Scheduled servicing. Servicing is based on expected usage. So the company actually has an idea of, based on how much you use it, how long the printer will need before it needs repaired. Mean time between failures, or MTBF. There is an average length of time that the printer works without failing. The best places to find this information and the scheduled servicing are either the printer manual or the manufacturer's website. I've never actually gone looking for these, but I would assume they're...
The printer manuals, yeah. Epson has manuals all the way back to their first printer. I downloaded the Epson LX800 manual, which is probably a 1986 vintage printer, and it's still up there on Epson.
That is cool.
I know where I'm going to go when I'm geeky bored and have nothing else to do. Okay. Total cost of ownership. This goes back to what Terry was talking about. It's important to consider the total cost of ownership of a printer. This includes the purchase price of the printer, of course, but also the cost of the supplies, such as paper and ink, price per page printed, maintenance costs, and extended warranty costs. So you need to think about all of that. When calculating the TCO, you should also consider the amount of material printed and the expected lifetime of the printer. So you guys know that they have these really cheap inkjet printers now that you can get for like $40, $50. And you think, oh great, I've got this wonderful printer and I didn't have to spend too much money for it. But the ink is really can be really expensive. And so while you've gotten a really cheap printer, the cost of the ink and paper are almost as expensive as the printer itself. And they call that the razor and blades model, where the razor is really cheap, but the blades are really expensive. But, you know, in order to keep using the razor, you have to buy the blades. In order to keep using the printer, you have to buy the cartridges. So you might also look, when you're getting a printer, you might want to pay more for the printer and have the, if the ink is cheaper.
Actually, in Australia, we have a big electronics distributor called Dick Smith Electronics. They're one of the very big ones. And next to each printer ad, they actually have the cost of replacement ink and any paper requirements actually listed down there, and a link across to the catalogue numbers of the replacement cartridges.
We need that.
Wow, wow. You guys are honest in Australia.
Yeah. Well, yeah, people won't buy it if
really
they don't.
We need that. Oh, absolutely. But here you buy it and you don't know how much you're going to be paying for it in some cases until you get it, unless you're really, you know, thinking about it and research the cartridges before you get them, before you get
one
the printer.
Question.
Sorry, I'm having to lean forward.
One question I have about printers is, I heard that with some types of, maybe this isn't the right place for it, but I've heard with some types of printers you actually have to use them every once in a while to keep the ink from drying up.
It's absolutely the place for that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Your inkjet printers, this is why blind people might want to consider laser printers, because if we don't, we use them so rarely, some of us, that honestly our ink will dry up. So toner doesn't have that problem.
Yes,
and
it does.
Lasts us
okay,
longer.
Yeah, which one?
Toner has a shelf life. Yeah, it's a longer life, like you're looking at 2 or 3 years for the shelf life of a toner, but toner does have a shelf life and it does actually age and become a problem. We actually had a beautiful Canon inkjet. We bought a Pixma 3000 or something for our my first wedding back in 2004, and we didn't use it for 3 months and all of the ink tanks dried up and that was the end of it. And I didn't know about methyl ethyl ketone for cleaning out the ink cartridges, and because that's not recommended in the servicing manuals, I didn't want to do it, so we lost a very good but very dead
inkjet. The other
inkjet.
Thing is, if the print head is in the printer, then it's even more of an issue. Some cartridges will have a print head in them. I know the Lexmark my dad had, the first one anyway, the print head was in the cartridge, so every time you got a new cartridge, you got a print head too. But if the print head is in the printer and that clogs, then you're really in trouble because you're not getting a new one every time you get a cartridge.
How
this
do
is
I actually
why
tell?
I got a laser printer
mine.
About 5 years ago. You don't. If you print something out and people can't read it, then you know. And if you replace the cartridges and they still can't read it, then you know. That's all the indication you've got. That's why it's so important if you are a blind person and you don't print documents, but you're going to print that really important resume or that really important research paper, you should probably think about a laser printer. I got this one, this HP LaserJet 1020 from 5 years ago for about $100, and it's the best money I've ever spent. Okay,
the other point with laser...
So now we're going to talk about... Okay,
sorry. I delayed just one second too long.
No, it's all right.
The other point with laser is if you actually have a good laser and you're not printing in econo mode, it's actually possible for blind people to feel, if your fingers are good, where the ink has hit the page, or smell that the ink has hit the page. You can usually smell the singed toner, and that can actually tell you whether a print has been relatively successful short of having to scan it.
My printer sort of makes little clicking sounds. Like, I noticed that if a document has very few things on the page, then it doesn't, it makes a certain sound, but then if a page is like chock full of stuff, then it makes a little bit more clicking sounds. And so sometimes I can tell that, not necessarily whether the document's blank, but okay, this isn't a very big document that my dad's just printed from downstairs or whatever. So I have sort of learned to tell when the printing part of it's actually sort of happened as best one can.
I get occasionally, I get from my horrible web interface on the Jet Direct card, it actually has a sort of status thing about how good the laser, the toner is and things. I'm not sure how accurate it is, but it actually does report on a scale. If you can get through the...
Well, you need to make sure that you, there must be a counter somewhere that you have to reset when you replace the toner, so you want to look at that. That's actually something that this chapter doesn't cover that's in one of the later chapters about printers, which we're not doing, so I'll mention it here. If your printer has counters to know how it, you reset those when you put a new cartridge in, and then it uses that as a gauge to tell you how much is left, if you don't reset that counter, then you won't really have a good gauge of how much you have. Mine doesn't give me anything, so when it's gone, it's gone.
My Lexmark won't let me print until I put a black and white and color cartridge in.
Yeah, some of them do that. Some of them do that.
The other point that's worth mentioning, and this doesn't come up in this chapter, I don't think, but some people are tempted to actually go, well, I won't bother replacing that black cartridge because it's just annoying, and I'll just use the color cartridges to make black. That's a really good way of running your color cartridges out very quickly, and the printer manufacturers will rub their hands together and go, ah, liquid gold, as they empty your wallet.
Pretty much, yeah. Okay, so now we're going to talk about interfaces, because you need to be able to connect a print to a printer in order to use it. So otherwise, it just doesn't do you any good. So some of the common interfaces used to connect printers to computers are parallel, USB, and wireless, and there's also, that's for local computers, and we'll talk about networking in just a minute. Serial and parallel are becoming less common as USB is replacing them, and we're seeing that all the time. If you've got a really old note taker, though, that still likes a parallel printer, if you've got a BrailleNet Classic or something, you're going to have a heck of a time finding a parallel printer, but they are still out there, I think. Corporate printers might connect to a network using a network cable. Serial data transfer is the movement of single bits of information one after the other. Serial connections are only one bit wide. A serial connection can be used for dot matrix printers because the printers do not require high-speed data transfer. Parallel data transfer is faster than serial data transfer. Parallel data transfer is the movement of multiple bits of information in a single cycle. The path is wider for information to move to or from the printer. Isn't it 8 bits wide?
Sometimes. On our Braille lights, and usually on printers, it's going to be 8 bits wide, but it actually depends on the device.
Okay. The original parallel standard was actually 4 bits wide, and you actually sent by, it was actually a 4-bit receive
nibbles?
Path and an 8-bit send path. Yeah, nibbles. Yeah, it was one nibble.
That's weird.
Yeah, the newer ones, they changed that, but it's generally 8 bits wide. It sends 8 bits at a time, but it just depends on the parallel port standard and stuff.
Jackie actually described it really well in her lecture. She said serial is kind of like the ants go marching one by one, and parallel is sort of the ants go marching 8x8, and I kind of like that, so I'm borrowing it.
Yeah. And you remember having to configure your printer settings and changing the data bits to 8 and the stop bits to 1, and then you had the Braillers that did 7 and 2?
Yeah, if you were
the Braille Blazer.
I don't remember. Well, I think you could set the Braille Blazer to 8 and 1, though.
Is that what all that stuff was? I never knew what that did.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember seeing that on the Braille Light status menu, too.
Parameters.
Yeah, that's the one. I remember it being there, and I remember that they were always settings that needed to be there, but I never understood what those settings were or what they meant or what it sort of referred to. It just was.
I still have an old Romeo that I have to, even on parallel, I have to go find someone to go into the BIOS and turn off the EPP mode and put it back to SPP, or I get garbage out. And every other setting is fine, but...
We had a scanner like that where if you wanted it to go at any decent speed, you had to put it on EPP, and we'll talk about that a little bit later.
ECP is faster than EPP now because it uses a DMA channel, but I don't think the chapter goes into that.
This scanner was in about 1999, so this, and that's what this scanner said we should do. This is a Microtech horror, so anyway. IEEE 1284 is the current standard for parallel printer ports. Enhanced Parallel Port, EPP, and Enhanced Capabilities Port, ECP, are two modes of operation within the IEEE 1284 standard that allow bidirectional communication, and there's also some other ones. There's also unidirectional and bidirectional and other stuff. And the parallel cables, if we're talking about note takers and stuff, you might have seen them before. One of them is an end that has 25 pins. It's male and it's got two screws. And then the other end has a 36-pin connector, and it's got these little spring clips on the side. And instead of a bunch of little pins, it sort of feels like a bar of pins. It's kind of hard to describe. I think that's a Centronics connector. I think that's
sometimes the spring clips are on the printer.
Yes. And actually, they usually that's right. The spring clips are on the device, and then the little things that they clip into are on the side of the connector. That's right. I haven't seen one in a while. SCSI, Small Computer Systems Interface, SCSI, which is spelled SCSI, by the way, if you didn't know, but it's pronounced SCSI, is a type of interface that uses parallel communication technology to achieve high data transfer rates. This is all we see about SCSI in this chapter, and apparently there were SCSI printers at one time, but I have no idea about them. Carrie, you have any idea?
They're not common. There were special purpose SCSI printers for things like mainframes that ran everything on SCSI, but the actual complexity of the interfaces was pretty prohibitive, and I don't think they got... they're certainly a niche market thing.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, USB is the most common connection method for home computers. Both it and FireWire are high-speed plug-and-play options. Ethernet printers can be shared... Printers can... I don't know.
That's a good, I don't know either.
The question for the recording was, would USB 3.0 be of any advantage to a printer? And honestly,
yes.
We don't know.
If you actually had a really high volume printer that was printing exceedingly high quality images, say at about 1200 dots per inch, the quicker you can shovel those images into the printer memory, you could probably use USB 3.0, but to be honest with you, I'd probably just get a printer with a network port because it'd be more useful, and give USB 3 another 6 months to really become mainstream.
Yeah, it's still so new at this point that we don't really know. We don't know how well it's going to be embraced and stuff like that. So, Carrie's right. Give it some time.
Talking about printer memory reminds me of a story of a couple months ago about industrial printers, industrial photocopiers with hard drives in them, and how IT people didn't clue into the fact these hard drives store every image printed on them. People went into a warehouse, found four printers, one evidently from a police station, one from a hospital, and two from other companies. Yeah, they got domestic violence reports, pictures for the hospital patient records.
Wow, I have not heard about this at all.
Yeah, because apparently some of the big company printers photocopiers have hard drives, so they can spool many, many jobs at once. And I guess they don't delete their jobs when they're finished with them. So everything that's printed through there is stored on the hard drive. Nothing is deleted,
I guess,
until the thing
gets
full. I would assume they would delete the oldest ones as it gets full. But I mean, that would still leave quite a few images on the drive. So yeah, the group just went in there randomly, grabbed four. And,
even if it did delete them though, utility like Recover would get them back, because you just have to recover the header information for the directory entries, and even the 30 gig of images, 20 gig of them would come back.
Yeah. So yeah, IT people need to format those drives.
I'm not even sure if you'd know. You really have to dig to find out whether a copier had a hard drive in it. They certainly don't mention it in this chapter, but probably because we're not talking about stuff on such a high scale.
Yeah, it would be for big industrial ones, because, five or six people wanting to copy at once, so.
Okay. Printers can be shared over a network. Connecting a printer to the network requires cabling that is compatible with both the existing network and the network port installed in the printer. Most network printers use an RJ45 interface to connect to a network. Wireless printing technology is available in infrared, Bluetooth, and wireless fidelity, or Wi-Fi, technology. Infrared uses invisible light to transmit data. The two transmitters must have a clear line-of-sight view of each other and can be no more than 3.7 meters or 12 feet apart. We talked a little bit about infrared last chapter. We'll hit it again in the advanced portable devices chapter. Bluetooth technology uses an unlicensed radio frequency of short-range communications. It can communicate over somewhat longer distances than infrared and does not require a line-of-sight connection. Many new printers are Wi-Fi enabled as well. We will talk more about Wi-Fi in Module 8, which is the networking module, which Grace and I love so much, but hopefully you guys will enjoy it. Laser printers. A laser printer is a high-quality, fast printer that uses a laser beam to create an image. I love these things. The central part of the printer is a metal cylinder that is coated with a light-sensitive insulating material. This is known as the electrophotographic drum, or simply the drum, we shorten it to. When a beam of laser light strikes the drum, it becomes a conductor at the point where the light hits it. As the drum rotates, the laser beam draws an electrostatic image on it. The undeveloped image is then taken past dry ink or toner that is attracted to it. The drum turns and brings this image in contact with the paper, which attracts the toner from the drum. The paper is passed through a fuser that is made up of hot rollers, which melts the toner into the paper. The way they've described it here, this process is incredibly confusing, so now we will go through it step by step and break it down for you, which is a good thing because that was a complete mess. There are 6 steps that are required to print a single page, and it seems like it should take fewer steps because these things are just so fast, but there are actually 6 steps, and these are cleaning, conditioning, writing, developing, transferring, and fusing. And these are referred to as the laser printing process. And they will be in your tests. So you'll need to at least have a general idea of these. You don't have to remember word for word the way I'm going to read it, but you'll need a general idea.
Know basically what they do and be able to put them in order.
Yeah, that's what you have to do, is know what they do and know what order they go in. And there's a little trick for remembering that, and we'll go. Cleaning. When an image has been deposited on the paper and the drum has been separated from the paper, any remaining toner must be removed from the drum. The printer may have a blade that scrapes all excess toner from the drum, and some printers use an AC voltage on a wire that removes the charge from the drum surface and allows the excess toner to fall away from the drum. So basically, the toner is very negatively charged, and that wire causes that to fall off of the drum, basically. And the excess toner is stored in a used toner container that is either emptied or discarded. And the toner that it's talking about here is the residue left over from the last page that printed. So keep in mind, these 6 steps are for one single page. And so we have to think about the process sort of going back from the last one. So we have to get rid of that toner so that we can use new toner later on. Okay. The next step is conditioning. And this step removes involving the old latent image from the drum and conditioning the drum for a new latent image. So again, this image is from the page that was printed before this one. Conditioning is done by placing a special wire, grid, or roller that receives a negative charge of approximately negative 600 volts DC uniformly across the surface of the drum. The charged wire or grid is called the primary corona. The roller is called a conditioning roller. Now, I think it's saying that some printers have a primary corona and some have a roller. Is that correct?
No, it's saying you have a wire or a grid.
Or a grid.
Well, it's saying wire, grid, or roller, it says here. So I'm trying to figure out, would it have a primary corona and a conditioning roller? I think
it would have both.
It's just another way to... It'd have both. Okay. Alrighty. Step 3 is writing. The writing process involves scanning the photosensitive drum with the laser beam. So we're actually using the laser now. Every portion of the drum that is exposed to the light has the surface charge reduced to about minus 100 volts DC from the, you know, negative 600 that we started with. This electrical charge has a lower negative charge than the remainder of the drum, as I just said. So as the drum turns, an invisible latent image is created on the drum. Step 4, developing. In the developing phase, the toner is applied to the latent image on the drum. The toner is a negatively charged combination of plastic and metal particles. A control blade holds the toner at a microscopic distance from the drum. The toner then moves from the control blade to the more positively charged latent image on the drum. And because the toner has more negative charge than the drum does at the moment, the toner is attracted to it. And
more positive charge.
More positive charge, I'm sorry. I had a feeling that would get a little bit confused here.
That's okay.
So step 5 is transferring. In this step, the toner attached to the latent image is transferred to the paper. The transfer or secondary corona places a positive charge on the paper. Because the drum was charged negatively and the toner on the drum is attracted to the paper, which has a positive charge. And the image is now on the paper and is held in place by this electrical charge we're talking about. The final step is fusing. And in this step, The toner is permanently fused to the paper. The printed paper is rolled between a heated roller and a pressure roller. As the paper moves through the heated roller and the pressure roller, the loose toner is melted and fused with the fibers in the paper, and the paper is then moved to the output tray as a printed page. So that's why, this is why paper from laser printers is hot. It doesn't have anything to do with the laser, which is what I used to think, but the toner has actually been melted into the paper, and obviously that's made it hot. The following mnemonic can help you memorize the order of the steps of the laser printing process. Continuous care will delay trouble forever. Cleaning, conditioning, writing, developing, transferring, fusing. I actually like the word constant because it's easier for me to remember. And yes, it's lame, but it helped me plenty of times on tests. So if you're able to, as you go back and read the chapter later or listen to this recording later, because I know it's a bit confusing right now probably. Sorry, I was leaning back too far. You'll hopefully be able to use that mnemonic to help you in remembering that. And you'll need to be able to, as Grace said, put them in order, and you will probably be asked about one of them at least on the Chapter 7 exam, and on at least once during the finals. So you'll have to know a little bit about what they are and put them in order.
You just want the basic overview of what these do. You don't need to be able to recite what's in the book.
No. You don't need to be able to do that.
Basically, the question is, what is the correct order of the steps? And then there are five options, and all the steps are scrambled into five different orders, and you've got to get it right.
You've also got questions like, which step does this? And it's a very brief, quick summary of what step it is, and you've got to match it.
It'll say something about which step involves the putting the latent image on the drum, and that would be right.
That's actually a question on your quiz today. To oversimplify the transfer process, you've got a negatively charged drum, some toner that is negatively charged but more positively charged than the drum, so that is actually attracted. The toner is attracted to the drum. Then, once the image is developed with the toner on it, the toner goes to the positively charged paper and is melted and fused onto that paper.
Yeah, it's not as important that you know about the chargers, just you need to know which step it does, basically which thing.
Which step does what?
Brief, you know, Reader's Digest version. So that's all you need to. You don't need to memorize them word for word, but you need to keep a general idea in your head of how they work.
So does that mean that every laser printer has a toner, a used toner container? Because I had an HP 1012, and I didn't see anywhere to empty a used toner container.
I have no idea, and that's kind of what I was wondering as I was reading this.
I haven't seen one either.
I'm not familiar with the inside of mine, so it very well could.
I think some of them actually have a compartment inside the actual, because the toner cartridge is actually a unit, and I think some of them actually have an empty compartment inside that unit where the toner is actually stashed away as well, so that when you pull the toner, replace the thing out, it actually pulls out the waste toner and stuff as well. But yes, I have actually seen, I had a digital LN03, it was an old deck printer, and it actually had a waste toner cartridge in it that you could pull out, and that's where the waste toner went.
Be very careful, toner is carcinogenic. Limitations to how long a parallel cable can be. That was just asked in the chat. The parallel cable can be 15 feet, or I'm not sure the meters. Just
5.
To know. 5 meters, okay.
Living with an American helps with that.
Those never stick in my head. Yeah, it would.
The reason you have length limitations is because when you send 8 ants down the ant trail at once, you get bit skew, and the ants wander in front of each other and bang into each other and fall over. In other words, you get scrambled data if the cables are too long, or it can be interfered with by external sources of electromagnetic interference.
Do they actually sell cables that are longer than 15 feet? I would certainly hope they don't, because that would... Why do they do that then? That makes no sense.
Because there are horrible devices that can actually connect between you and the printer that's 30 meters away and boost the signal and do all sorts of nasty things and violate every specification and still get your print job to the printer at the other end.
Alrighty. This part is very important. Warning, the primary corona wire or grid or conditioning roller can be very dangerous. The voltage runs as high as, it says, negative 6,000 volts. The only certified technician should work on the unit. So you probably don't want to go doing that if you've never done this before. Also, before working inside a laser printer, you should make sure that voltage is properly discharged, and that hangs around a while. Same with monitors and power supplies as well. That voltage stays around. Yep, go ahead.
Well, a couple of questions. We've mentioned that a couple of times that voltage hangs around for a while. How long exactly is a while in these?
3 to 6 months.
Oh, okay, wow. And also the toner is melted onto the page. Being metal and plastic particles, what kind of temperature is required to actually do that?
About 200 to 300 degrees centigrade at least. Paper burns at 451 degrees Fahrenheit, if you've seen the movie, so it can't be any hotter than that, or you'd set fire to the paper.
Yeah, that wouldn't be very cool.
There are special ways of discharging the capacitor. And to discharge the capacitor, you do printer training course, because believe me, if you discharge the capacitor, you'll be a red smudge on the other wall. And you may not get up for a while or at all.
All right. So now, because I said I would make this interesting, I have a recording of my laser printer, which I will play for you. So as you listen to this, think about those six steps we talked about and how complicated they seem, and then listen to how in a very short time this takes to print. So I'm going to use my iPod, and hopefully that more. And that's a pretty slow laser right there.
Yeah.
So all of that, just for
all the
one
six
page.
Steps just happen just like...
All those six steps, bam. And if you're printing a 50-page document, guess what? That happens 50 times. And if you're printing a really long document, that gets hot, I can tell you. We've printed some documents. They weren't very long. They were like event heat sheets, and you had like 400... Or no, they were time cards, and there were like 400 in some of these. And there wasn't very much on each page, but boy, they were hot when they came out. Because it had been going for a while.
There's somebody who was talking about last week or a couple weeks ago, an experience that they had with a laser printer and a corona wire that might have been charged and burnt something. And we were just kind of curious if you would talk about that again for people who maybe weren't here, because it would be an interesting story for them to actually hear.
If you don't want to own up to that, that's okay.
That's okay, you don't have to. But if you want to, you're welcome to talk about
it. We had heard that it, yeah. Okay, I take the resounding silence as a
so
no.
So it says you don't want to...
They may not be here.
They may not be paying attention.
Or paying
they're attention. Here, but they may not be paying attention.
All right, now we're going to talk about impact printers. And you don't see these as much anymore unless you're talking about special applications like carbon copies and some old receipt printers. So impact printers are very basic. Impact printers have printheads that strike the inked ribbon, causing characters to... be imprinted on the paper. Dot matrix and daisy wheel are examples of impact printers. Impact printers are good because they use inexpensive consumables, so the ink is fairly cheap, and they use continuous feed paper and can create carbon copies. The unfortunate thing about them is that they are also slow, they're loud, and they have limited color capability. And the graphics that they can produce are very low resolution. The continuous feed paper, if you've seen Braille embossers, most of them still use continuous tractor feed paper where there's perforations between the pages and there are the little strips, sprocket strips down the side. The types of impact printers, in the daisy wheel printer, the wheel contains the letters, numbers, and special characters. The wheel is rotated until the required character is in place, and an electromechanical hammer pushes the character into the inked ribbon. The character then strikes the paper, imprinting the character on the paper. This is similar to the IBM Selectric typewriters that had a ball with the characters. It uses a different shaped thing, and so that's kind of how they work. You don't see these much anymore. They were pretty popular in the... in some of the early days of computing, the early 80s, maybe late 80s. And Banks and credit unions use them in Jamaica? Okay.
Is this Daisy Wheel?
I just have to repeat that for the recording. Daisy Wheel or Dot Matrix? Which one are we talking about? Or do you know?
I know if you're using a fixed character set and you're not changing fonts, Daisy Wheel are better because they actually give solid lines rather than dotted lines, which are easier to read.
Yeah, that's the thing, is if you wanted to change fonts as well, you had to change the wheel, and some of the drivers, you could say, okay, I need to change the wheel, hang on, don't print anything until I go in here and switch this wheel. And there was somebody did a modified wheel that would basically just bang the period, and you had to get a modified hammer, but you could get very dirty braille out of a Daisy Wheel printer. I have never seen this, and I only know about it from somebody who claims to have used it. And he probably has. He's a fairly reliable source. Thanks to the marvels of YouTube, I have found one of these things. So we can,
listen to it.
Let me just find it here. I'd rather loud at the minute. Okay, here's our Daisy Wheel printer. Let's see if I... That is a really, really cool sound. I really think that's cool.
The one I had, because I lived at a Presbyterian manse, and the one I had, they had actually sounded more like a machine gun. That one was actually quite passive compared to the one these people
had.
Yeah,
that's a pretty fast one. And so they sound a bit like a Braille embosser to me. Yeah, that particular one sounds like a Braille embosser to me. And I think there is a solenoid in there that does some of this stuff. Okay. So now we're going to talk about the dot matrix printer, which is going a little bit further forward in time and technological advancement. The dot matrix
just
printer
a comment
is similar
about
to the Daisy
things,
Wheel. Yep, go ahead.
Whatever that was you were playing.
That was a Daisy Wheel printer from YouTube, and I don't remember which one it was.
Sorry, I'm obviously lagging. Okay, sweet. Can I just say to people, imagine being in an office with three or four of them going for most of the day.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah, if you like chipmunks and getting skinned alive.
Basically.
Wow. Okay, yeah, that would be really annoying. The dot matrix printer is similar to the Daisy Wheel printer, except that instead of a wheel containing the characters, a print head contains pins that are surrounded by electromagnets. When energized, the pins push forward onto the ink ribbon, creating a character on the paper. The number of pins on a print head, 9 or 24, indicates the quality of the print. The highest quality of print that is produced by the dot matrix printer is referred to as near letter quality, or NLQ. Most dot matrix printers use continuous feed paper, as we said, and it is like the Braille embosser paper. The paper has perforations between each sheet and perforated strips on the side, and apparently these are used to feed the paper and to prevent skewing or shifting. That makes sense if you've seen one of these go. Sheet feeders that print one page at a time are available in some of the... Yeah, theory, you're absolutely right. Sheet feeders that print one page at a time are available in some of the higher quality office printers. A large roller called the platen applies pressure to keep the paper from slipping. If multi-copy paper is used, the platen gap can be adjusted to the thickness of the paper. And these don't use a whole lot of pressure, and they... I don't know if they're quite like Braille embossers or not. That was a comparison I was trying to figure out as I was doing this, and I'm not quite sure. I have got two recordings of these, if I can get... This is an Apple Image Writer, and quite a few will be saying, oh, I remember this when you hear this sound. So, here we go. So I know for me that
I had one of these in middle school.
I certainly heard a lot of in elementary.
Print shop, anyone?
Here is also an Epson much faster printer. I didn't catch the name as it went, but this is much faster. That has an interesting rhythm to it.
That is printing a graphic in draft mode, in single pass graphics print mode.
Actually, it does sound a bit like that. Yeah, you could put that in a printer in a remix or something. You could put that in a song. That'd be great.
Did you actually have, when we get to the scanners, do you have ScanJet Elise ready to play?
Yes, I do. Oh,
good.
Yes, I do. And I have, I'll actually show you the most horrible, annoying flatbed scanner in the world, because I figure you need a flatbed scanner doing normal things before we have that.
And if you think that you feel like you'd be skinned alive having to listen to these printers all day, the scanner is so much worse.
I played it for Grace, and she was like, oh my god, make it die. And I used this in a library, too, and people were about ready to kill me. Okay, but that will be later on. Now we're going to talk about inkjet printers, which a lot of us will be used to. Inkjet printers are good in several respects. These printers are very versatile. The images they produce are high quality, and they are relatively less expensive than laser printers. Actually, laser printers are coming down, especially the smaller home office ones, but that is an advantage to them that your test will talk about. The text also says that they're quick to warm up, unless this is an advantage. I'm not so sure because, like I said, these laser printers that I'm seeing don't take very long at all to warm up, and I had an HP that it took a very long time to do all kinds of things that before it actually started printing out the page. But that's what Cisco believes is an advantage, and so that's what we have to have that so that it will be in your test. So these are versatile, the high quality images. Yeah, they are fairly quiet, I suppose.
No, I said comment.
Oh, comment, sure.
You ought to listen to a color one starting up. It takes about 2 or 3 minutes before it'll start printing.
You're talking about a color inkjet or a color laser?
Color laser.
Yeah, the course doesn't really focus much on color lasers, and I was a little bit disappointed on that because I actually find this stuff interesting. So
I think it's because they need to warm parts of it up and stuff, and that takes time, or?
Yeah, I think they're devilishly complicated. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, they have to make passes for black plus the color.
Okay.
And that would be onto the drum before you even see the page, I think. So that's probably one of the reasons that they don't talk about them, is they are complicated, and I don't think you see them as much as you're going to see your monochrome laser in an office. So
actually, I've seen them for like about $300. And it's disturbing because they're really cheap and it's a color laser for $300. But don't ever buy the toner and drum refill thing for it because I think that's more than $300.
Oh, unbelievable. It is. Like the replacement consumable. Wow. The going rate for a black and white toner, by the way, is about $60 to $70. So, last time.
Ink cartridges were always that, though.
I remember when they were in the 30s and $40.
One thing I wanted to say about ink.
That must
and
be in America.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, we're
whatever
sorry.
You do. Speaking of ink, whatever you do, don't buy the refill your own ink cartridge kits because, firstly, they're just completely messy, and if you don't do them right, which is very easy to do even for a sighted person, that ink is going to be all over the inside of your printer and it will damage it, and that is not covered under warranty.
The other point is that there was actually an advertising campaign that Epson had where they were putting concrete into a washing machine, and they're going, this is what third-party ink does to your printer. And if you would like to hear printer technicians swear like bullock drivers, and if you know what bullock drivers are in Australia, they swear a lot, you explain to them how you got this $5 ink refill kit and you put it in your printer and it's never worked quite the same since, and then you run very fast in the opposite direction from the printer technician until they finally catch you and tell you to buy a new printer.
I like that. Sorry, my chair. I didn't realize it was going to be that. So some of the drawbacks to inkjet printers are that the resulting pages are wet. The ink cartridges can be expensive, depending on the printer. And the nozzles clog. And we'll talk more about those in just a second. The print quality of an inkjet printer is measured in dots per inch, DPI, as we talked about earlier. The higher the DPI resolution number, the better the image will look. So again, that same concept. So, and it is like sample rate and audio, just because they really want to get us used to that DPI concept. Inkjet printers use ink-filled cartridges that spray ink onto a page through tiny holes. The tiny holes are called nozzles. The ink is sprayed in a pattern on the page. There are two types of inkjet nozzles. thermal, a pulse of electrical current is applied to heating chambers around the nozzles. The heat creates a bubble of steam in the chamber. The steam forces ink out through the nozzles and onto the paper. And this presumably is where the Canon got their bubble jet name from, I'm guessing. But I'm not really sure, but that's kind of what my head thinks.
Yeah, I believe so.
The other type is piezoelectric, and I'm not sure I'm saying that right. But anyway, piezoelectric crystals are located in the ink reservoir at the back of each nozzle. A charge is applied to the crystal, causing it to vibrate. This vibration of the crystal controls the flow of ink onto the paper. Inkjet printers use plain paper to make economical prints, so, you know, cheap prints, while special purpose paper can be used to create high quality photographs. Or even we used to have things with our printer where you could make what they called t-shirt iron-on transfers, and you'd print, you'd use, I forget what program they gave you with this Lexmark printer. This was actually a pretty good one, about 1996. And you would print on this special paper, and you got this thing that you could then iron onto a shirt, and I guess it looked okay, because we did some of them. And I guess people didn't say, oh my god, that's horrible. When the inkjet print is complete and the paper leaves the printer, the ink is often wet. Actually, it is most of the time. And you should avoid touching printouts.
Yep.
Yes, that's what it's going to say. You should avoid touching printouts for 10 to 15 seconds to prevent the image from smearing. This is especially important for us as blind users because we cannot see if the image has actually smeared. Unless you might have enough vision to do that, but if you don't, you won't really know. And also, as we talked about, because ink can dry up if it hasn't been used for a long time, as we said, it might be worth considering a laser printer that won't have as much of a problem with that. The second diagram in this section is good, so you might refer to your notes. It explains the internal components of inkjets. It's a little bit long, so that's why I didn't include it here. So if you're really interested, and you may want to refer to the notes anyway, because I'm not going to get through everything. There's so much detail in here. I'm doing my best, but there's just so much here. I have a recording of an inkjet printer if you'd like to hear it. If you think you know what those sound like, and you don't need to hear it, but I can go ahead and play it anyway.
Play it anyway for comparison with the last couple of recordings.
Yeah, okay. Alrighty, I'm having iPod problems.
Oh, fun.
Let's see.
And guys, always remember that these lectures...
Okay, I am keyed up.
Oh, okay, sorry.
These are live, these are unpredictable, you know, so... What you get is what you get. Is that where you're going?
No, I was going to say, remember that these lectures are supplements to your notes. We try to cover a lot of what's in the notes, but we try to cover extra stuff as well, so you're not going to get every single thing in the notes. That's what the notes are for.
And some of this I've had to reword because I just don't like the way that the text explains it. So that's another advantage to the lecture we get, is some of this gets reworded. Okay, here is an
most of it.
Printer. Most of it does. Let's see if it'll stay keyed. Oh, here we go. Sorry to get missed. Okay, you get the idea. It didn't stay completely keyed.
Yeah, we heard it. Much quieter than the impact printers, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is. Any questions so far? Anything you want to interrupt with? Okay, I will assume not. If you have anything, please feel free, because this is your... This is your class, and this is your
class. It's your lecture.
Yep, your lecture. So, moving on, we're going to talk about solid ink printers. And these are kind of, I've never seen these, and I think they're relatively new, but we do hear about them. So, solid ink printers use solid sticks.
These are
ink
old.
Rather than, really, they're old? I thought they were new.
Yeah. No, these are old.
The information I heard that made it sound like this new, fangled, awesome thing.
Nah, this is old. These are old.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, I didn't get that impression, but thanks for correcting me on that. Anyway, solid ink printers use solid sticks of ink rather than toner or ink cartridges, hence the name. Solid ink printers produce high-quality images. The ink sticks are non-toxic and can be handled safely. Solid ink printers melt ink sticks and spray the ink through nozzles. The ink is sprayed onto a drum. The drum transfers the ink to paper. Pros to solid ink printers are that they are easy to use, the prints are vibrant, and they can use many different paper types. The downside to solid ink printers are that the printers themselves are expensive, the ink is also expensive, and they are slow to warm up. As you can imagine, because of the way that, you know, we're actually melting ink onto the page, you know, that they don't seem like they would be ready to go really quickly. And Wikipedia has interesting information on these, so you might want to take a look at these. I thought I read somewhere that Xerox is the only company that actually manufactures these beasties, so you might not have a whole lot of choice in what you buy as well if you were to go with one of these.
This is something for a business environment, really. Now they're more into the lasers and inkjets because they're starting to be able to come closer to the qualities of the very vibrant solid ink printer.
Yeah, same with the dye sublimation, which we'll talk about later. Again, if you're interested, look at the diagram in section 7.1.6 because it explains the components of solid ink printers and does a very nice job. Describe other printer types, and these you may not see as much either. Two other printer technologies that you might work with are thermal and dye sublimation. Thermal printers are often used in cash registers. So if you're listening when your transaction comes through, they're the ones that don't sound like the dot matrix that we just heard, but you still, you know, you get your receipt and they're quieter. And some of the older fax machines use this technology as well. Thermal paper comes in rolls and has a waxy coating. The paper becomes black when heated, and print heads in thermal printers are usually the width of the paper that's being printed on. Areas of the print head are heated as required to make the pattern on the paper. An advantage of these is that there are no moving parts, so they last a long time. Disadvantages are that paper is expensive, it has a short shelf life, so you have to use it quickly. It must be stored at room temperature, and images are poor quality. Receipts kept in a wallet for too long will fade because of these temperature and other storage issues. And I have this a lot when my dad goes through and we try to figure out and balance and what did I spend money on. And some of them has trouble reading after a while. So this is why when you have an important receipt that you'd like to keep for a long time, you should scan both sides of it as soon as possible and keep the scans for your records. And that was Grace's idea. So thank you, Grace.
And you can reprint them out. They will take a reprint out of that receipt, but they won't take the original receipt if they can't read it. So actually scanning it up. Actually scanning up both sides and keeping it in your files. You can print that receipt out. Even if it's two pages, they'll still take it, and it'll still be their receipt. So
you've had to do that, I take it?
I've actually printed receipts, and when I got my Sennheisers replaced when we did the first warranty return on the first set, and the people at JCAR were just like, wow, that's clearer than our receipt printer. Thanks, we can actually read this, because the Epson scanner software actually brought it up clearer than it was previously.
That's interesting. Okay. Sorry, my chair again. Dye sublimation printers use photo quality images... produce photo quality images for graphic printing. This type of printer uses solid sheets of ink that change directly from solid to gas in a process called sublimating. So again, we're dealing with solid ink here. The printhead passes over a sheet of cyan, magenta, yellow, and a clear overcoat, and this is referred to as CMYO. There is a pass for each color. And the pros for these printers are that they produce very high quality images, and the overcoat layer helps prevent smearing. The cons to these are that the media can be expensive, and that these printers are better for color than for grayscale. So photography is where you would see a lot of these. And actually now in photography, both dye sublimation and the small color inkjet printers are providing quality prints now because the inkjet printers are just easier to come across. And so, are there any questions so far? Okie dokie, we're going to move right along then. Now we're going to talk about the installation and configuration process for printers. When you buy a printer, information about how to install and configure it is provided by the manufacturer. An installation CD that includes drivers, manuals, and diagnostic software is included with the printer. This same material can be found on the manufacturer's website. And often the manufacturer's website will be more up to date than that CD you got, because you don't know how long that CD has been in the box. So it is your best resource for the latest drivers and extra printing software on your test. So this you need to know. The website of the manufacturer of your printer is the best place to go. Now we're going to talk about the setup process of a printer. Okay, although all types of... Yep, go ahead. Welcome back, Chris.
As blind people, one of the other advantages to going to the website and getting things like drivers is a lot of the newer printers I found have very yucky flash-based graphical installation screens that come up when you put in the CD, and you often can't get past them to the part where you can install drivers without sort of browsing directories and making guesses. And oftentimes, if you just download the stuff off the website, it's a lot easier.
That's a good point that I hadn't considered, so thanks for bringing up. Yeah, some of these install screens...
Because some of the stuff on the website, find a consumer version. You might actually want to go and see if there's one for like businesses or distributing, because that will have a lot less of the flashy, graphic-y stuff.
That's a good point.
Usually you can just get driver only, and often if you don't need the extra print utilities, for example with my laser printer, because it's on a Linux server, you just install driver only, and it's a smaller download, and it just puts the driver on.
Yeah, I think for inkjets, though, they can be useful because there are utilities that will help to try and clean out the nozzles and stuff for you. We had that on a Lexmark, and it did seem to improve things when my dad used it from time to time. So, and it also helps with cartridge alignment, which we don't really go into, but it's a way to try and make the image look as best we can. That process is not accessible, so if you actually care about it, you'll need sighted help to do that. All right.
Inkjet printers cheaper than laser printers?
Generally, yes. Although, like I said, the laser printers are coming down. I'm seeing my printer, when I got it 5 years ago, this 1020, which is probably like the 1012 that you had, the little newer, it was $100, and it might have been on special, but, you know, that's a really good deal for a laser printer. It was a pain getting this thing to work on the Mac, and that's a whole other topic. Yeah, the lasers are coming down. The home lasers are coming down. Okay, so unless there's any more questions, we'll go on to setup. If there are, just yell at me and I'll stop. Although all types of printers are somewhat different to connect and configure, there are procedures that should be applied to all printers, regardless of who makes them. The very first thing you should do is read the instructions for setting up your printer from its manual. Or it may be on a quick start poster that if you've got a sighted person around, it may help for them to read them off to you, look at the pretty pictures, and help you that way. Next, you want to unpack the printer, take an inventory of what is in the box, make sure that all of the proper cables are included, find the ink and toner if it is present, and set the driver CD in a place where you will find it again if you're not going to install from the manufacturer's website. If you're looking at a store like Amazon, they'll usually tell you, you'll see a section that says, what's in the box? And it'll tell you. Make sure all of the stuff that it says should be there is there. Remember, printers generally do not come with paper, and not all printers come with USB cables or ink or toner. Be sure to feel for and remove any sheets of plastic, labels, or tape that have
been... Or take a trip to the website if there is no sighted person.
Yeah, you can do that too. Am I behind or is Grace behind? I wonder.
I imagine she...
Okay, so these sheets of paper and plastic and tape and things can be found in the ink and toner cartridge holders, paper tray, and some other really odd places. And it's important to remove all of this extra packing material, or you could damage your printer when you first try to use it, which we wouldn't want to do because you just paid good money for it, or someone else that you're working with did. Next, move the printer to its desired location. Make sure that this location gives the printer plenty of ventilation and has easy access to a power point or an electrical outlet if you're in the States. Printers can be heavy, so remember to use proper safe lifting procedures. This is going to be true especially of the laser printers. The inkjets, some of them are pretty light, but if they're not, you know, use your knees to lift it, don't use your back, and all that stuff, see chapter 2 that we talked about. Install the toner or ink cartridges in the printer, making sure to remove any plastic tabs that seal them, and they may have tape as well. So get all of that stuff out of there. Insert the paper
and be careful.
Or envelopes. Yep.
Be careful with the print with any kind of levers. Don't try and force them. Figure out how the printer cartridge holder actually opens. Don't just try and force it open because you may break it.
Yeah, and that wouldn't be fun either. For that part, if you have sighted assistance, you may want to take it. If you don't, just as Grace said, be very careful. Use the manual, follow along with it as best you can, and if you really can't get help, you can try calling the manufacturer. Some of them are actually quite good at walking.
HP will walk you through it.
How to install this. Yeah, HP is probably good. I think I remember that HP has, I think I remember hearing like 40% of the printer market now. I think Josh said last time he did, when he did this lecture. But I know one thing, they've got a lot of printers. Install the toner or ink cartridges in the printer. Like I said, make sure you remove all the stuff. Insert the paper, labels, or envelopes into the paper tray and attach the paper tray to the printer if it isn't already attached. Any questions here?
Also, the ink and toner things, I imagine, that only go one way, and I've never really seen them, but from what little I have seen, I imagine they can be pretty nasty and difficult just to...
They usually just kind of snap in. You will know when you get that printer cartridge in the right way. It's keyed, it's tactile, you should be all right.
I actually need help to learn how to properly replace the toner in my laser printer without damaging myself with the printer.
Yeah, the hard part is with these cheap color ones, they typically have four cartridges, all of which have a physically identical form factor, but they must be placed in a certain order based on color. And I've done
fantastic.
That for trial and error, but if...
Yeah, there are some of those.
I don't have to, don't.
I've never experienced one of those. If I were looking for a printer, I'd get one with two cartridges because the black and white the black cartridge is usually different to the color cartridge, and you're usually okay if you do it that way.
Problem with that though is that it's expensive to replace the multicolor cartridge if you get a single multicolor cartridge, because you've got to replace the cyan, the magenta, and the yellow, and that's expensive to replace that combo.
Yeah, the idea is that you replace only the color that's dying, but as blind users, how are we going to know which color is dying?
The weight of them.
No, I mean, which one is... I mean, look at...
Which color?
So we're just supposed to take
them out. You'll forget.
And feel them and examine them every once in a while and see, does this one feel lighter? I don't know. I don't want to be...
Well, usually somebody will tell you, you're missing such and such a color, or if the printer software warns you that you're missing a color, you can actually take the cartridges out and, if necessary, weigh them on that cheapy set of scales, and it will tell you which one's the lightest cartridge, and you'll know that that's the one you've got to replace.
That's actually a good point. I hadn't thought about that. Get closer to your mic, Aiden. It's hard to hear you.
Sorry, I was going to say, I don't think you can use the word cheap and blind products mixed together. But with the Lexmark, it always asks me, well, what type of cartridge did you just insert? And I said, I have no freaking idea. That's what you should tell me.
Maybe then they made it so that the slots are interchangeable. That might not be a bad thing if you knew which cartridge was which. Okay.
Well, it said which type.
Now we're going to talk
cartridge color.
Yeah, you'd have to know. I mean, if all the slots are the same, and you just tell it, okay, that was the black, that was the cyan, that was the... That might actually be a good thing if you could figure out which one was. I kind of like that idea if it works the way I think it does. So now that the printer is set up and in the location we need, we have to plug it into the computer, print server, or network, and plug the power cord into a power outlet. A printer can be connected and used as a local or network printer. A local printer is connected directly to a computer port, such as USB, parallel, or serial port. The local computer manages and sends the print jobs to the printer. Local printers can be shared over the network with other users, and we use the computer to the computer the printer is attached to do that. A network printer is connected to a network using a wireless or an Ethernet connection. The network printer allows multiple users to send documents to the printer over the network. After determining if the printer will be a local or a network printer, connect the appropriate data cable to the communications port on the back of the printer. If it is a local printer, connect the other end to the computer. If it is a network printer, you will need to connect it to a networking device, such as a router. Or if you happen to be in a business, there's probably an outlet on the wall you might be able to use if it's enabled. Once this is done, attach the power cord to the printer if necessary, and plug it into the power point or outlet. Warning, never plug a printer into a UPS. The power surge that occurs when the printer is turned on damages the UPS unit. This is especially true for laser printers. But regardless of which one you have, save that space on the UPS for something else that should go into it. I mean, you probably aren't going to need to print things if your power's out. I mean, I guess maybe you could, but use that for something else.
Print your UPS and you're not going to have as much.
Yeah, that's true.
UPSs won't drive a laser. The current draw is too high.
No, they can't. No. And even an inkjet, I just don't see the point, really. The whole point of the UPS is to get your computer shut down as quickly as
the inkjet will just, that's going to drain your UPS, that's what I was saying.
Absolutely.
You want to give your computer as much time to shut down as possible, so you don't want to be printing things off your UPS.
Unless, of course, you've got a UPS that's good for a half an hour of standby time, and your average Windows box only takes about 30 seconds to shut down. So in an emergency, if you really had to print something, it can be done.
Yeah, but if you're in an emergency and that paper has to be printed by tomorrow, I would think if you could get somebody to take and rush you over to a printer, that would probably be what you'd do, I would think. Now we're going to talk about updating the drivers, firmware, and memory. So, Aiden, here's your memory stuff for you. After you've connected the power and data cables to the printer, plug and play. If it is plug and play, the operating system should discover the printer and attempt to install a driver. If you have a driver disk from the manufacturer, use this driver. You can also use the driver from the website. And before you even try and let Windows do it, read the directions and see if that's what the manufacturer wants you to do. Sometimes they'll say, no, don't even hook it up until we tell you to in the setup process. Sometimes they'll say, Windows will ask, cancel, and install our driver. Do what the manufacturer wants you to do. Really the best way to handle that is go with what the man, because they know, they hopefully know they made the thing. The driver that is included with the printer is usually more current than the drivers used by the operating system and or the one on the website. The Add Printer Wizard can also be used to install the new printer. Printer drivers are software programs that enable the computer and the printer to communicate with each other. Drivers also provide an interface for the user to configure printer options. Every printer model has a unique driver. Printer manufacturers frequently update drivers to increase the performance of the printer to add options or to fix problems, or when new operating systems come out. You can download new printer drivers from the manufacturer's website. When you're doing that, make sure you get the driver for the operating system you want, and we'll come to that. Find out if a newer driver is available. Go to the printer manufacturer's website. Most manufacturers' websites have a link from the main page to a page that offers drivers and support. Make sure the driver is compatible with the computer that you are updating it on. This refers to the operating systems and the architecture. So make sure if you have a 64-bit system, you get drivers that are designed for 64-bit processors, and hopefully the manufacturer has them. Do not install 64-bit drivers on a 32-bit system, and do not install 32-bit drivers on a 64-bit system. They will not work. Is that correct, Kerry?
Yep.
And that's one of the problems, I think, with 64-bit is it's hard to find drivers sometimes. Okay, step 2, download the driver. Download the printer driver files to your computer. Most driver files come in a compressed or zipped format. Download files to a folder and uncompress or unzip the contents. Save instructions or documentation to a separate folder on your computer. That way you can find them later. Step 3, install the downloaded driver. Install the downloaded driver automatically or manually. Most printer drivers have a setup file that automatically searches the system for older drivers and replaces them with the new ones. If no setup file is available, follow the directions that are supplied by the manufacturer. Step 4, test the new printer driver. Run multiple tests to make sure the printer works properly. use a variety of applications to print different types of documents. Change and test each printer option. That would take a while. Firmware is a set of instructions stored on the printer. The firmware controls how the printer operates. The procedure to upgrade firmware is very similar to the procedure for installing printer drivers. We don't really get any more information than this, therefore, if this is something you need to do, consult your manual or the manufacturer's site, and be very careful when updating firmware. Make sure you have, you know, make sure you have steady power. It's like updating firmware on anything. You want to make sure that process goes as smoothly as possible because you might have a brick. So unless you really need to upgrade the firmware on a printer, I don't really think that's a great idea. Don't think that's a good idea. Sorry, I'm trying to make sure that I don't cut out. I'm having a little more problem with that than I did at the beginning. Adding printer memory
to
the printer
can
improve printing speed and allow the printer to handle more complex print jobs. Thank you. All printers have at least some amount of memory inside. Generally, the more memory a printer has, the more efficiently it operates. Consult the printer documentation for memory requirements. Things to look for: memory specifications. Some printer manufacturers use standard types of memory, and other manufacturers use proprietary memory. Check the documentation for the type of memory, the speed of the memory, and the capacity of memory. And that would really be, I think some of them are using regular memory, like it says, like DDR memory and stuff, and then some manufacturers are saying, no, we want to do our own, and you have to buy it from us.
A lot of them will use SODIMMs.
That's, okay, yeah, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah, but some of them need parity, some of them need to be error correcting, some of them need to be 70 nanoseconds. It's much easier to get the wrong RAM for a printer than it is to get the wrong RAM for a laptop. And your safest bet is to buy it from the manufacturer or a reseller that is authorized by the manufacturer.
That makes perfect sense. Next thing you want to check is memory population and availability. Some printers have multiple memory slots. To find out how many memory slots are used and how many are available, you might need to open a compartment on the printer to check memory population. Upgrade printer memory, and it gives steps here. 1, turn off the printer. Yep. 2, disconnect all cables. 3, open the memory compartment. 4, replace memory modules or add new modules. 5, close the memory compartment. 6, reconnect all cables. 7, power on the printer. 8, run a self-test. 9, print a test page.
And 8 and 9 are really important, because if you don't do that, when you want to print, something will go wrong.
Yep.
How will you know if your memory's dead?
Corrupt image.
If it just doesn't work right, that might be a good...
That could be a printer driver as well, though. A lot of printers will actually do a memory pull type of thing.
No. When they say print test page, they actually say the first test page you should print is the one from the printer, not the one from Windows that says, here's a dinky test page. Then you do the dinky test page from Windows.
Some really cheap printers don't have a self-test option, but most do.
I don't think mine does. If it is, it's something that HP doesn't really tell you how to do.
It's probably holding down 2 buttons or something and then dancing and singing a special maintenance song.
The only thing on this printer is an on-off rocker switch. That's it. Nothing else. So yep. I have no idea how you do it. Unless you turn it on with the cover up and put the cover up and down a certain number of times. I don't know. I'll have to do some research if I really wanted to do that.
Yeah, a lot one of the things you can get from the test pages of the printer, which is, if you can find out how to do it, is worthwhile, is when you print the internal test pages off the printer, there's often a maintenance sheet that will tell you how many pages have been printed and how many pages have been printed since the last toner change, and that can be handy to know.
All right, that's good to know. This printer doesn't even seem to have a counter to do something to tell it that you've changed it. All right. Configuration options and default settings. We're going to identify these now. Each printer might have different configurations and default options. Check the printer documentation for information about configuration and default settings. Here are some common configurations that are available for printers. Paper type, standard, draft, gloss, or photo. Print quality, which could be draft, normal, photo, or automatic. Color printing, multiple colors used. Black and white printing only, and black ink used. Grayscale printing, color image printed using only black ink in different shades of gray, paper size, standard paper sizes or envelopes and business cards, and paper orientation, landscape or portrait. Print layout, normal, banner, booklet, or poster. Duplex, normal, or two-sided printing. All right, did you have something, Grace?
I did. Did you guys, I'm not sure if anyone's aware of this, I wasn't. Were you guys aware that different countries have different regular paper sizes?
Yep.
I didn't know that until Carrie mentioned it, that Australia uses A4, and we use the letter 8.5 by 11.
Yep.
Yeah, and basically... Sorry, I was just going to say that... Your regional setting is critical under Windows for that, unless you want to override the defaults, which can then be a problem if the Word macros pay attention to the regional setting and not what Word says. So we had a bit of a minor discussion about whether the regional setting should be changed to English Australia, and it's often easier to do that than it is to mess around with all your Word settings and your internal stuff. Sorry, go ahead, Brian.
I was going to say, I wasn't as nearly as aware of it until I had to train somebody on an index printer, which is entirely based on European standard A4
oh,
paper.
Oh, God,
and
I hate
all
that.
Sorts of weird, all sorts of weird measurements.
Can we say pile? Kind of I probably shouldn't, but can we say that anyway?
Pile!
You know what? I used to think that, but I actually, now that I've sort of used them a while, I actually quite like them. I mean, I won't trade in my Juliet any day.
Look on,
they're decent.
Look on YouTube and see how many repair videos there are of people having to, like, how do we replace the printer head? How do we replace this, that, and the other? Okay. Going back, if we may, to paper types, and this may be particularly important for laser printers, and... In the documentation for my printer, it actually says that if you choose the wrong paper type, like if you put in labels or transparency, and you have it set for plain paper, it says that it can melt stuff. And if you think about how laser printing works, based on what we've learned, it could change the temperature of the fusing stuff, or how quickly it goes through the printer, or various other things. And I have to remind my dad of this occasionally when he goes to print labels, because I don't want melted labels in my printer. That would be bad.
I think the other thing is if you tell the printer that the paper size is different to what it actually is, it will warm up parts of the thing that it shouldn't, and there's no paper to insulate that. So I think that's what causes that. Yeah, also paper type as well. And on your weird measurements comment, the reason that A4 is 210 by 297 millimeters is because when you actually calculate the ratio of the length to the height, it actually works out at being an approximation of the square root of 2, and it actually makes a difference as to how you can fold the paper up. So there you go.
Okay, we are right at 11 o'clock.
And we basically finished printers.
And yeah, there's a little bit more on how to optimize printer performance. So is that what we're going to come back to next week?
Yeah, that or just go on to scanners.
Is this section something we can...
I'd do the optimized stuff next week and then do scanners.
Let's do
I think it's important.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it is important to make sure that your printer's being... So apparently I get to do this next week. I thought the nerves were over, but I get to do it again.
Oh, you'll be fine. So what I think we're going to do is I'm going to put out this feedback form. If you guys have, fill it out. If you guys have any suggestions for things that he can do differently for next week, put them in. Or just give him positive feedback like, good job, you did awesome. We'll do both. But yeah.
Or if you didn't like it, if you don't like the way that I'm reading, because a lot of this is coming off a Braille display, if I need to change that, let me know. I mean, I am, like I said, this is my first lecture, and I want to do a really good job, and because I actually think printers, I've always been fascinated by printers, from like when I saw my dad's dot matrix printer, the DMP-105 with the Tandy, and God, that thing was a one line at a time slow thing, and I've always been sort of fascinated by them ever since then, so I want to do a good job on this lecture, because I enjoy it, so...
The only minor point that I would put in, probably because I won't get to the feedback form, is there is a small amount of finger scan noise from reading the Braille display, but it's not critical.
I can't hear it.
I did earlier.
Part of that is because of the fact that the microphone is fairly close to... It's under a desk, but there's some open area, and I'm using an Olympus microphone, if you can tell.
We can cut.
Why not?
We can trim.
It's
no big deal.
It'd be glad I don't have team and cells on my Braille.
Oh, I know.
A whole lot louder. Then you'd all know I was reading on a Braille display.
I don't know. Does my finger scan noise actually come up?
I never hear yours.
No,
but you're using a headset microphone, not a desk microphone.
Part of the reason I'm using a desk mic is so that I can pick up the iPod sounds, though. Fair enough.
Yeah, and that's a good enough compromise, though.
The USB headset I bought goes blah, 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 blah sometimes, and so it's like, okay, I can't use that. Even the wired one. Yeah, we won't talk about that.
No, I think it's a fair trade-off, though, because those sounds do actually
I have to lean up right close lecture. I'm, like, craning forward.
I didn't notice them at all. I didn't either.
Did you hear my chair going?
I couldn't imagine doing you this without a Braille display. Like, I don't know how I'd do it.
Nope, I couldn't.
You can buffer jaws in the headphones if you're good at it, and you summarize your notes down so that, you know, down arrow, ramble, 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 down arrow, I'm still rambling, there's my next line. We didn't have a Braille display for the first 6 months. You get good at it, but it is a bit harrowing.
Well. I can do that really well on the Mac, better than I can on jaws, actually. I don't know. Well, partly because you can hit control after you've heard a bunch and say that and then hit control and it'll pick back up again. The control acts like a pause resume thing, so that can help.
That is cool.
Yeah. NVDA, I think, does that with the shift key now.
Oh,
so
cool.
Have fun with that.
And there are keys to do it with jaws as well. I just can't remember what they are, but you can actually stop and start reading again. There are keys to shift
backwards and forwards, but there isn't one to say pause.
They're the shift keys, yeah.
Oh, wow.
But they don't... Yeah, they go back and forth with them.
No, there's one to stop. I just don't know what it is. It's time for Jaws keyboard help.
There's one to pause, which is control, but it won't resume from. I don't believe it resumes from exactly where you left off when you start again.
Alex will do almost the last word you heard.
Oh, cool. One thing for everybody to note: 5.4.8. If you have trouble, please message me and ask for help, because you probably will.
This lab is new. Luke had some trouble and.
I was going to dob myself in anyway because I wanted to bitch.
It probably didn't help that I was doing it at 2 in the morning, but it was a royal prat, to put it bluntly. So have fun with
that. That's
because
it makes you check the color of things. And yes, blind people can check the color of things with insert numpad 5.
He made the mistake of saying, oh, this doesn't look bad. It looks accessible. And I said, okay, well, I'll figure out how we can do it then.
And Grace kind of slightly misinterpreted my comment. And then we just thought, stuff it, we'll run with it anyway.
So using Windows, I don't know that key.
I don't know it either. If you're using WindowEyes, you get to go and have some research fun.
Yes, you do.
I can probably help with WindowEyes. I have a silly lab question, since I'm playing sort of mad catch up. And I was hoping to knock off a bunch on my 5.5-hour flight tomorrow. I scooped the entire folder, and are they likely to change in the next week?
No. You're going to have changes to them in March of next year, but until then, you should be fine. And if any labs do change, you'll have big announcements in lecture, big announcements on the Cavi announce, all sorts of stuff.
You'll know.
And you will know. I will be very... It's glaringly obvious.
We'll even tweet about it. How's that?
Yeah.